Hello.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Heart to Heart Podcast. I'm Bria.
And I'm Kim.
And today we have a great episode for you talking about why trauma feels so dirty.
Yeah, this is an amazing, amazing topic. Actually, one that
Cha, my best friend, who was on
our podcast before. We love her. This was a conversation, Bria, I believe that you two had.
Yeah, right? Very recently. We were just on the phone, you know, catching up, talking, and both of us have been through just so much this year, and we were kind of just, like, talking about why trauma has made us feel so dirty, and when I say that, like, we mean, like, trauma has made us feel so stained in a way, and, like, it feels as though it's taken something from us, or, like, you know, changed who we are, and why is that? Why do we let trauma make us feel like that?
I think that's such a powerful thing to think about. And I think it's something that a lot of people, including myself, constantly grapple with and deal with. So I'm so excited to dive into this. But before we get started, as you know, you can listen to us on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Especially for this episode. I think people should leave a review for this one. If you resonate with the trauma episode, I think you should leave a review.
Amazing. All right, let's get started. So
let's get started.
I think we'll have to take a deep sigh.
That was a Negro spiritual sigh.
Exactly. I think we're going to get started with talking just about some experiences of trauma that we faced more broadly. So I think one that I will start with is, this happened to me less than a year ago. And I just was working in an organization. I'm a part of a lot of different organizations. And I just really had a bad experience with both racism and sexism. And particularly in this case scenario, you know, this individual really tried to diminish my work and tried to essentially like negate and diminish everything that I was doing and contributing to the organization. And I think at the moment it was like, you know what's happening and little comments are being made, actions are building on top. Mentioning to other people, hey, does this seem weird to you? Hey, does, you know, this seem off? But in my mind, you know, I'm somebody who I love to give people the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes I'm like, I'm overthinking. I'm in my head, like, you know, this must not be the case. Then it became very apparent what was going on because there were some watershed moments, some watershed situations that really made everything come to bear. And, you know, this individual explicitly said language to me that had racial undertones, that had sexist undertones. And I had to call that out. I had to bring that to the attention of other people, older, you know, actual adults who were involved in the organization. And, you know, I had to make it very clear what was going on. Because I think also what was very sad was that a lot of people weren't recognizing what was going on. And even though we were mentioning that situations were happening, I think people as a collective didn't register it, or perhaps were scared to register what this actually was.
Yeah.
Because it was so intense and because it was so egregious and bad. And, you know, I think that experience of feeling like, you know, I wasn't being heard and feeling like all those little experiences in the moment were made to feel like not that serious or not that important, I think it caused a lot of trauma, right? Because I think it made me really question myself when I was always feeling uncomfortable from the very second that stuff started happening.
Yeah.
And it was also sad then having to collectively, you know, express what was going to me and what had happened to me essentially over the past like year. And, you know, having to bring that to bear was really hard.
Yeah.
It was really
dismissed. It was dismissed for such a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like that real downside of like the stigma of trauma, if that makes sense. Like, if we all feel weird about like calling things out when they're taking root, then it just leads you down this path of you feeling bad about yourself and you feeling dirty and you not trusting your intuition and taking on all of the burden of like someone else's actions when in fact you were the victim.
And I think specifically in that situation, when everything was unfolding, I was really thinking to myself, like, Kim, like, did you really fumble? Like, did you really not step up to the plate? And then I had to really think back on everything I had done, all the time I had put in. And I was like, yeah, no, this isn't me.
And I remember when this was all happening, because you would call me and detail like all these things that were happening to you. And after putting in hours upon hours of work outside of like your job description and picking up so much slack, you're still asking, am I doing enough?
Yeah.
So I'm sure when you actually had to like put this all out into the light and actually sit and process how you were treated, or should I say mistreated, and like the ways in which you were, you know, taken advantage of, to be honest, because people were like milking you for your work, but not treating you like a decent human being. Like when you finally have to sit with those things, that's when you kind of feel dirty, even though you literally shouldn't.
Right.
You literally shouldn't.
Right. And I think it also impacts like how you move forward, right? Because I think then after in other leadership positions, I assumed, I was like, okay, now I got to go extra hard. Mm-mm. Because I felt like I was working against things that were fake, that were made up.
Fake.
And that is, I think that also speaks to just like the difficulties of being a Black woman leading and, you know, people knowing that you're at the forefront of organizations. Like, you know, people are always asking, like, what are you doing? What work are you putting in? And I think that just comes with a lot of pressure, because I think people don't always assume that you're going to like carry out your job just because of the stigmas that are working against us. The, you know, lazy Black people trope.
Yeah.
The incompetent women trope. You know, we know all the tropes, right? So.
And those layer on top of each other because you are in fact a Black woman.
Right. Like it's an intersectional experience. It's a different experience.
But my thing is like with like the feeling dirty thing, it's like, those stereotypes are being placed on you. You don't have to try to work to change anybody's mind about anything. It's on that person with the baggage and with the vile thoughts and perceptions of people to do the work. You, if they're not doing the work, that doesn't mean that you have to pick up all the slack and do the work. That doesn't become your burden.
Right, because I was also like, okay, so what? I'm going to work myself to the ground in an effort to try to prove to people.
To prove what?
Right. It didn't make sense.
And did anything change when you're trying to prove yourself? Did anything change?
No.
That's the whole thing also with like respectability politics. Like I know that's a tangent, but that's literally what respectability politics is. It's like working so hard to like prove yourself in this like white supremacy system.
That's always destined for you to fail.
Always destined for you to fail, and you're never going to get anywhere. Yeah. No matter how many suits you put on, and how many briefcases you got, and how much you, you know, straighten your hair or contour your nose, you're never going to be it.
Yeah.
So you might as well do whatever you want.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that is something that I had to learn, but I think working and processing through those experiences was really, it took some time. And honestly, it's stuff that I'm still processing and going through. Because I think it could really make you have a lot of paranoia and anxiety, right? Because other people also knew about the situation. Other people heard what was being said about me. So you almost feel like, okay, now this is like bigger than just a few people, right? Like this has been now expanded to a network of people.
And those people still aren't stepping in.
Right.
So if they're not taking action, it's like you're sitting there in your own corner being like, so I must just be crazy. I must have really done something bad.
Right. And luckily, I had an amazing, amazing friend who knows who she is, who was right by my side through all of this and, like, truly was my rock. Is my rock still through all of, like, through just everything that happened. Such an incredible friend. Love you. You know who you are. So, so grateful for that support. But, again, it was very, very real trauma. And I think also, too, you know, this happened more recently, but there were other like incidents like this in high school. I don't think they were as severe, but there was definitely other little moments where I think a lot of organizations that Brie and I were part of, a lot of work we did. Was just not recognized. And like sometimes like literally our names would explicitly be cut out of stuff where it really shouldn't have been cut out. Like our names would be cut out.
We'd be the president of a club and there'd be a newspaper write-up. Where were our names? And then people feel stupid when these things happen because they know they're dead wrong. And you ask a question like, and it's not that we're doing things for praise.
No.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like, no. But if a letter is going to be written detailing, like detailing the accomplishments of an organization that you're a part of and you've like heralded the accomplishments, you're going to just ask like, oh, okay. And then people look at you like, I didn't know they weren't going to put your, okay. Mm-hmm. Sure, Jan.
No, literally. Again, like you said, it's if we are gonna sing of people's praises, then like let's uplift the people who've done the work, who put in the 30 hours, who literally just did the work. Yeah, so I think that experience, like it kind of was like still reliving in my head, I think, when all that other stuff was unfolding. Because I was like,
yeah,
I've been here before.
Feeling like you have to prove yourself.
I'm
sure having to, when it was like finally over, when you were able to sit and think about everything that happened collectively, the experiences mm-hmm. we just talked about in high school, plus like the most recent experience, I'm sure it was a lot to process and made you feel icky.
Yeah, it did.
Even though you shouldn't feel icky.
It did. Because I was almost like, what did I do? What was it about me that like elicited this individual to feel such rage and to like, you know, say these things about me? But I was like, there's nothing about me. And I think that's one thing that like people have to realize. A lot of the harm that happens to you says a lot more about the other people than it ever does about you.
Yes.
And people will try to put that on you. You cannot let that register and affect who you are and like how you view yourself.
It's not your burden to carry.
Yeah.
It's never your burden to carry. And I think that I've talked to a lot of my friends lately and it feels as though a lot of them are going through the same thing, even if it's like different settings or, you know, whatever. It's all comes back to like almost the same lesson
mm-hmm.
of like, I just want my friends to know that when people screw you over, it has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
My friends are such beautiful, amazing people and horrible things have happened to them. And when they internalize it, it makes me enraged. It is not your burden to assume.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like, that's when like, when, I don't know, when things end with people or whatever, like just like in my own life, when friendships have ended, I've learned like, if that person's giving you zero, that doesn't mean you take 100.
Yeah.
You leave that for them.
Mm-hmm.
You leave that for them. And I think that so many times, like we get caught up trying to process and overprocess because the other person's doing none of that work. So we try to take up that work, but it's not our job. It's not our job. You need to make peace with the situation for you. Then you let go and let God.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's it.
That's literally all you could do.
So beautifully said.
I think when I think of my own trauma, obviously the most recent one comes to me is like my dad, losing my mm-hmm. dad. And I think that for me, like that has made me feel icky and like in a way that probably sounds so stupid, but it feels... When I think of it, it's hard for a multitude of reasons, but it's hard because like dealing with loss and being sad is kind of just like the antithesis of like what I am or who I try to be, what I try to strive for. Like I really pride myself on like being optimistic and being kind to others and like being a good listener. I know I said this to you earlier, like I try to be a good listener. I try to be very kind. But when I have to like open up to my friends about how I'm feeling about loss, I'm not being a listener in that moment because I'm now the one like talking and it makes me feel weird. It makes me feel dirty. The fact that I'm taking up space in my head and feeling burdenous. And I know that's not the case when you're talking to people who love you. You don't feel like a burden, but that's just, it makes me feel dirty talking about it sometimes. It just does. And that's something that I know I need to like talk about and go to therapy about. So
yeah, and I mean, like, everything you said is like so valid, and you're so, you know, valid and correct for feeling how you feel. I think it's also hard because it's just like you're forced to assume a lot of emotions that you didn't have to before.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think it's just such a shift in what you're experiencing. So it just feels so different that like it's almost like a, I don't want to say out of body experience, but like, yeah, I guess
it's
like
surreal. In
some way, right.
It's
right.
Surreal.
And so you're just, again, trying to figure out what your life looks like now and how you operate now. And I think just that difference and sometimes that vast change just makes you feel strange or maybe contributes to this like feeling of ickiness or feeling dirty. But
yeah,
you know,
it's like nobody would say feel dirty that your dad died. Like, that has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
That's something that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, why would I ever feel weird about that? But I think that's just something I gotta deal with.
Yeah. And, you know, I tell Bria this in our own personal conversations, but, you know, always here for you and always be that, you know, I'm always here to listen and, you know, be the shoulder that you can cry on. Or sometimes I think when we are going through stuff and like we're reaching out more and feeling like a burden, like I know sometimes I felt like this recently and just like sharing stuff with you, Bria, but I think it's also friendship. And again, like you said, these people love you and nobody sees it as a burden. People just see this as a part of the growth of your friendship, the growth of you as a person and your experiences in your life. We're always going to go through these things. So to anyone listening, like, you know, definitely call on the people that you need to call on.
Please.
And, you know, it might be your mom. It might be your best friend. It might be a therapist. It could be a lot of different people, but know that like your feelings matter.
Yeah.
And they deserve to be heard.
They do. And I think that's why our friendship is so good, is like, there's so much understanding between us.
Yeah.
And that's like, I think that's the key to a good relationship. And we're going to do an episode. I promise you, it's going to come soon, everyone. We're going to do an episode on what makes a good relationship.
I love that.
Because I don't think people understand the core tenets of like what makes a good friendship or relationship. It's a little sick. It's a little sick.
Just a little bit.
It's a little sick to me. I'm like, how are people at their big ages not understanding what like reciprocity is?
Whew. We'll
get y'all another day.
Wait on it.
You'll be gotten together soon.
Yes. And, you know, this is something that we've already began to hit at, but I think, you know, just within the past 4 or 5 years, it's just been a loss and gain of so many relationships and friendships, and that in itself could cause a lot of trauma, right?
Yeah.
Because you develop really close relationships with people, and then when there's major shifts and changes, I think it can make you question yourself. I think there's just a lot there, I think, to process. And, you know, I think for my own self, like, again, like over the past like 5 years, there's been so many of those changes. And I think it's a lot to take in, because you could be so used to like spending so much time with one person, and that shifts and that changes, right? Yeah. And like your life changes. Your life changes.
I feel the same way when I think of who I entered college with and who I'm leaving college with. That's a change.
Mm-hmm.
That's a change. People who were loving you down and saying how much they ride for you, and those people are gone with the wind. It's like, what? It's hilarious. It's hilarious. And like, oh, I just, when I think of how much my life has changed in these 4 years, I just have to laugh sometimes. I just have to laugh. It's either laugh or cry. I'm not going
to
cry.
Because it's a lot to take in.
It's a lot.
College has been a lot of highs and lows.
Them lows have been low.
Literally.
Those lows have been a little lower than
in the trenches.
Got her.
Nisi, we can laugh about it.
Reporting live from the trauma.
Reporting live from the trenches.
As my love future once said, can people tell we're sleep deprived right now? We're going to disregard the fact that I love Future. No one's going to talk about that. Thanks.
That is Bria's man.
Anyways.
For anyone who doesn't know.
We, Kim and I, for about, it feels like 10 years, have said that we're going to do a Drake and Future Halloween costume.
It would require so much effort. Like, okay. How am I supposed to get that little heart light up? Like,
you know they sell wigs. I think we could do that. Even we'll if we paint it, we could paint like a bald cap. You know?
Oh my goodness. Well, look out for that. Because if we step,
the next cover of the podcast is going to just have that.
Just don't ask any questions.
God. No questions, please.
We love these little moments of laughter and joy. And also, too, I think that's how we work through our trauma. As we talk about it, we try to think of everything kind of like holistically as a collective.
Yeah.
And I feel like we very much try to be positive about what's going on. Like, obviously, some of the situations suck. And I think grappling with your trauma over time is just not a fun process, like, objectively.
Yeah.
But I think if you have other people to share in that process, it makes it so much better.
It does. And, like, I just always remember, of course, there's moments I'm so deeply sad, but that sadness is not me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm separate from the sadness.
Yeah, it's not who you are.
It's not who it doesn't define me. It's not who I am. But I obviously allow myself to be sad. I allow myself to feel, but it's just, like, misery is not me. I'm not a miserable person. God did not make us to be miserable people.
Mm-mm.
So why would I live every day miserable? If I feel a wave of grief, like an ocean, I will sit in it, sure.
Yeah.
But we still deserve laughter and joy and happiness. And I think, like, sometimes our society doesn't enforce that message.
Yeah.
And makes you feel like you either have to minimize your trauma completely or that you have to, like, be defined by it.
I agree. I think there's, like, no
in-between. There's no happy in between.
And that's really sad, right? Because, again, that also fundamentally, like, changes how you move forward and how you shift and how you change. And I think it's just really important, like you said, to know that it is not you. This is a temporary moment that you're in. This is a difficult moment that you're in, but you're going to get past it. And also, too, I think an important part of getting past it is sitting in it. And we talked about this in earlier episodes, but I'm of the belief that sometimes you just really have to feel and you have to let all your emotions out. And so, yes, that means I'm really sad in this moment. I just have to get through that and sit in that and grapple with that and understand what that means for me, what this looks like for me moving forward. And then I just feel free.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get over that hump. And you're going to feel free.
And this is something Cha and I talk about as well. But she always says that she can be very logical about her problems. And I feel the same way about myself, where I know logically what's going on. But just because you can understand mentally does not mean you're feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a word for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Do not always sit in your head trying to rationalize your thoughts and your issues and your problems. Sometimes you just have to feel. And I think that that's hard for a lot of us, me included.
I agree.
Me included. I think also this might be a reach, but I don't think anything's a reach when we live in a white supremacist society or a capitalist society. I think capitalism plays a role in this too.
Ooh.
Because if we sat and took time away from working and making money to process, that's kind of radical. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, people say rest is radical.
Yeah.
I think taking time to rest and therefore process trauma is radical.
I agree. Audre Lorde has a lot of really good writings on that.
Mm.
So I would definitely point to her as somebody who speaks to this heavily. But you're so right. I think society doesn't want us to rest. And I also think there's societal expectations that are also associated with this as well. Like, I think the idea, especially for men, of being like soft and like having feelings and being emotional, like, that's obviously seen as something that's like not good. And so I think that also prohibits people from processing or feeling or like being really emotional about what they're experiencing. And I think sometimes in our society, it just, I don't know, I feel like expressing your emotions and being very vulnerable is not something that is like uplifted at all. I know, especially in the Black community, it's kind of like, move past it, get past it, like, keep it moving, keep it moving. It's like, no, sometimes you have to stop and you have to sit in that and you have to be uncomfortable with your thoughts and with what you're feeling and experiencing.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Next time, I would like to talk more about Blackness and trauma.
Like on the news or even in the academic spaces, like we're using terms like Black bodies and different things that I think really speak to the trauma and tragedy that obviously has happened to Black people. But I think so many people want to move to a more Black futuristic lens, a more positive lens of thinking about what Black life means. And I think we definitely, as we should. And I definitely think there needs to be a conversation about how we get there.
Everyone revisit the episode with Hari Zayed.
Yeah.
That was an amazing episode about like Afrofuturism and getting in tune with our emotions. And like, what does progress look like for the Black community?
And what does it mean to be Black and alive?
Yeah.
Definitely. And also plug, there is this amazing art book that I actually just bought for my older brother. It's called Black Futures. Can't remember the author's name, but if you just Google Black Futures art book, it will come up. And it's this beautiful collection of protest imagery and other paintings and artwork done by Black creatives that speaks to this idea of what it means to be Black and alive, speaks to Afrofuturism. And it's beautiful. Like sometimes you could be feeling so low and so dejected. And sometimes just seeing stuff like that, at least for me, I'll speak for myself. It really is inspirational.
I agree. This was such a good soul-bearing episode.
It was.
I hope people can just light a candle and listen to this episode.
Drink some tea.
Clean the house, maybe. Do what you gotta do. Stare out the window. Like, this is one of those episodes. So thank you for listening. We will see you very, very soon next Sunday with another great episode for you.
Yeah. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.